You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 447 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from different locations. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion, Storm.
And I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington.
It's still over the Super Bowl 48 champion. The Seattle Seahawks. I hope everyone had a lovely Christmas if they celebrate or is currently having a happy Hanukkah. But if your wish this holiday season was for the Seattle Seahawks to make the playoffs, or even merely, as mine was, for their Week 18 game against the Los Angeles Rams to matter, even if it was eight other things have to go right, or seven other things, I guess, at that
point. Some of those things, I think most of them could have happened.
I mean, if the Bills didn't, I don't know if there's Bills are locked in to a seed, would they have played anyone against the Patriots? That's the single least likely thing, right?
Was that the one that would have been the only one?
I don't know if it would have been the only one. That struck me as the single least likely one.
That was one of the ones that would have needed to happen. Who cares? It doesn't matter. This last weekend for the Seattle Seahawks.
Chicago would have had to be Green Bay, I'm pretty sure, as well.
I hope you're hungry. For nothing!
Oh, no.
That was this week for the Seattle Seahawks.
Starting with their game on Thursday night?
Yeah, pretty much. A football game was played. Like, we can recap it, but there was a beginning, a middle, and an end. Quarters happen. Plays happen throughout the game.
I did not see one single second of this game. I checked in for the first time at halftime as I was running late to the Moda Center at 6:30. And then followed the second half exclusively via Gamecast and social in the Discord during timeouts and Blazers Jazz. And
you were just like so riveted. You were like, I have to check it on Seahawks Bears because I can't turn away from Blazers Jazz.
Blazers Jazz is actually quite good.
This is the year in 2024 Seattle sports, but Northwest sports. Yeah, you didn't miss anything. I watched every single play in this game. That's it.
That's the whole story. Ken Walker III didn't play. He was placed on IR with a calf injury that will end his season. Seahawks did rush for 122 yards
against
this terrible Bears rush defense, fourth most this season, including a 25-yarder from Kenny McIntosh. I went and looked this up. He's in my mind. Kenny McIntosh is like the first, like, you know, third string running back for the Seahawks to actually perform well at any point. But it's not true.
Flagrantly untrue. How dare you?
Well, I'm saying since like Thomas Rawls era, or since Chris Carson emerged as a starter, the Seahawks have like actually made people think running backs matter, because usually when they're starting running backs get hurt,
the
backup running backs do not
perform
well.
On the Seahawks. The Seahawks making running backs seem like they matter since 2016.
I mean, Zach Charbonnet has played well as a starter this season, but McIntosh over 5 yards per carry to lead the team. But DJ Dallas had a season like that. I forgot about the Travis Homer season where he had 7 yards per carry.
I love Travis Homer. He's on the roster, I think.
He's on the roster of the Chicago Bears. Wasn't he unable to play on Thursday due to injury, but he is on that roster. I think that was bolstered by he had a fake punt touchdown that season against Jags, I want to say.
Okay, here's another
Halloween.
Another thing I'll note about the Bears is they have a lot of ex-Huskies and a lot of ex-Seahawks.
What's their cornerback duo? It's Kyler Gordon and is there someone else? With Seahawks?
I don't, maybe.
Okay.
But it was just like everybody involved. It was like Daryl Taylor, Kyler Gordon, Gerald Everett, Coleman Shelton they credit him as a fumble, not a recovery. I guess that was a bad snap or whatever, but Coleman Shelton was definitely in on plays. Obviously Roma Dunze had a touchdown taken back in this one. So it's kind of like, and even Caleb, you know, like we're familiar with Caleb.
He's one of our guys. Yeah. It was reported, I believe, on Christmas Day that Pete Carroll was interested in the Bears job, which yes. And this struck the thought, would Pete Carroll bring back Shane Waldron as offensive coordinator?
Just run it back. No, he'd have shoddy ball, baby.
There was a falling out between Pete Carroll and Shoddy. There was not a falling out between Pete Carroll and Shane Waldron, although there was a falling out between Shane Waldron and the Chicago Bears. And look, you saw again
Shane Waldron
the
was
way
right.
that this offense was revitalized. Shane Waldron did nothing wrong.
That's the one thing we learned this year.
Really,
Shane Waldron
like,
did nothing wrong.
Shane Waldron was definitely like watching this on his TV somewhere, just cackling the entire fucking time. Not that the Seahawks necessarily like, you know, he just took a new job before they decided who their head coach was going to be for the security of it. I don't know that there were any really particular hard feelings between Shane Waldron and the Seahawks, but he didn't stay here. And boy, does the offense look a lot worse without him. It was just the second 6-3 game in the NFL since 2010.
Ryan Grubb is not going to be the Seattle Sports Figure of the Year. That's it. The games. He had one good game in 2024, and it was not with the Seahawks.
That is correct. The other was
we'll always
Seahawks.
Have the Cardinals game, right?
Yes. The other 6-3 game in the NFL since 2010 was the Seahawks losing 6-3 at Cleveland in 2011. So they've done this
Honestly,
in
I'll
a
never forget
6-6
it.
tie.
I'll never forget it. The first one, we saw zero plays of it.
Same, yes, very similar situation.
Driving back from Stanford. If the only thing worse than driving all the way to Stanford to see the Huskies lose and be around Stanford fans is the Seahawks losing 6-3 while you're driving home. That was a weekend.
There were Stanford fans? I don't remember those.
I quoted it.
I'm pretty sure we would have had some Russian River that weekend. So that was probably a positive of it. Yeah.
We got Pliny. Yeah.
We had a lovely time in Davis. It was just our time in Palo Alto specifically. It was great weather.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It was pretty nice. It was hot in Palo Alto.
Yeah.
Palo Alto.
Tailgated under the trees. Much as you always wish you had gone to
Cal
is your college choice. Once I saw Stanford's campus, I was like, wait, why didn't I go here?
The reality is you probably could have gone to Stanford.
it was plausible. So,
can you imagine how horrible ESPN senior writer Kevin Feldman would be had he gone to Stanford? Technocrat Kevin Feldman.
Oh, no. This whole podcast would be about AI. Venture capital.
Oh my god, that is a world I do not want to live in.
Stanford was like the single place.
Like, guys, I have some ideas.
Stanford was, for some reason, at that point, we regarded Stanford as a much bigger sports rival than anyone else. Even, I think, maybe even more than Oregon.
They were a bigger rival. You'd be like, all right, you know how there are libraries? We have to break down the system.
No, it's not that. It's like, hey guys, why don't we have a thing where a business where we buy a bunch of books and people can get them periodically. And then when they're done reading them, they can give them back to us.
That's
and
you.
Then we'll give
You'd
them
be like,
another book.
You know how like you read books one time and then you're just like, man, what do I do with this book? Somebody has to figure that out. That's technocrat
like,
Kevin Belton. Stanford.
Look, there's a lot of people that need to commute to various places. And wouldn't it be cheaper and better for the environment if we put all those people in one large vehicle and had it make regular scheduled stops throughout the day? One of my favorite jokes. Anyways, the Seahawks specialize in playing games where neither team scores a touchdown. They are specialists.
That's our thing.
Somehow, again, they changed coaches. The players have completely turned over for Pete Carroll was the coach in 2011. The players have completely changed over since 2011, and yet they are still the same team.
That was the year they made the playoffs.
No, it wasn't the year they made the playoffs. It was the year after.
Oh, are you sure? Charlie Whitehurst started it.
The only game Charlie Whitehurst started in 2010 when they did make the playoffs was, I mean, he might have started another one, but he started week 17. This was, you know, early season game.
I thought Tavares started the whole season. So Tavares was out for a game?
Yes, he just had some sort of minor injury. And that ended up being one of the reasons they didn't make the playoffs.
I paid no attention to that Seahawks team. And low-key, greatest year of my life.
Charlie Tavares went 7-7 as a starter. Charlie Whitehurst went 0-2 in his two starts.
Damn.
And that
if only Tavares
difference.
Hadn't been hurt, that team could have gone 8-8.
Okay, anything else? So that set up the real game of the weekend, which was us watching all of these teams and hoping for the strength of victory tiebreaker, and then most notably, hoping for the Arizona Cardinals.
All of it being close. Ah! That's what I have to say about it. Ah!
two literal overtimes in these games that we were paying attention to, plus this Rams Cardinals game that came down to essentially the final play. They were all very Seahawksy games in their own
every
ways.
Time I just the number one that I know we're not doing the 2024 pod yet, but the only true thing that happened over and over and over again in 2024 is that I'm an idiot. And every single time I got my hopes up, I got the feeling of, oh shit, this is actually going to happen. And that's when it doesn't happen. You can never think good things. Pelton cast.
I missed the final sequence of events that led to Atlanta's 56-yard field goal at the end of regulation coming up way short.
I watched it all.
I saw the first down play and didn't actually, for some reason, process that they didn't take a timeout. I just thought it was so certain that they did take a timeout.
It's so hard being like, why is this person who has this job so stupid? And it really is like.
And the good news is that's the only place we think that in 2024 is about NFL head coaches and clock management.
Sports coaches, like, it's really hard to fuck things up that bad as a basketball coach, right?
Probably.
Like, there's so many other, like, football, it actually matters. Coaches matter in football. So it's the only sport, maybe, that coaches matter.
Often it's the taking timeout that screws your team up in basketball. And interim or acting Blazers head coach Nate Bjorkgren, with Chauncey Billups unfortunately not coaching these two games I was at due to the passing of his grandmother, did not take a timeout at the end of regulation. And Scoot Henderson came up with a game winner against the Jazz to cap that thrilling comeback.
You should just call him head coach now. Chauncey's.
I don't think that is likely to happen. And I don't think that they actually played well because Nate Bjorkman was the head coach. I
you
think
don't
they
think
played well.
Chauncey's going to be fired before the end of the season. Maybe at the end of the season.
I think they played well because I was in attendance.
Hello! Well, all of these football teams played badly because I thought something good might happen.
They didn't play badly. They just couldn't close the deal.
I could feel it in my bones when the Cardinals got to the whatever yard line it was, the 6 yard line, 7 yard line.
I think it was closer. I think it might have been at like the 4.
And then Kyler drops back to pass, throws the pass. It bounces off of Trey McBride's head, and I'm just like, and you can just see the Akello Withers caught it.
You should do the explanation of what happened right beforehand.
Luca brought up, of course, and the people in front of us. I don't know if you heard them talk about that.
I did not.
Every person in the building who was paying attention was just like, you know what this reminds me of? And I had to go to each of them personally and remind them not to talk about it. We all thought about it. You don't
talk
about it.
But mine was a different one.
BB Fantasy Genius said it, and that's why it's his fault.
Exactly.
You hear me up there?
You don't know anybody in the MEAC. Is Coffin State in the MEAC?
They are, I believe.
Okay. Still got
not
it.
Not Tarleton. You named a team. You don't have it.
Name
the
one
rest,
for one.
Motherfucker. One for one. I'm one for one on the whack. Seattle U. Anyway, what was the thing that you were thinking of?
I was thinking of, we did talk about it afterwards, the Seahawks 49ers game in week 17 to decide the division championship. So that was not, you know, as infamous, obviously, as the end of the Super Bowl 49 that was canceled. But, you know, a situation where the clock was running and Marshawn was coming in because Marshawn Lynch was back on the team for that week. And they had 4 shots at the end zone and couldn't get in. It was, who was the tight end? Hollister?
Yep.
That was targeted on fourth down?
I almost called him Jack Westover. I wish. God, what a legend. Jacob Hollister could never. But it just, the second that Kyler dropped back to pass, I was like, oh, game's over. Fucked it up. It's all right. Just tired, dumbass coaches every single fucking year. Every single team, except for Washington, the one coach that we actually thought the Seahawks may have hired, probably would have hired, had they not hired Mike McDonald. He's the coach who's in the playoffs. The times that you think that you know, is this the Peltoncast golden rule? Now that's a little bit different. But when you think you understand what's going on, that's when you don't know what's going on.
Well,
except for me, when I understood the situation in that game and I knew what was going to happen.
You did. You've previewed our NFL over-unders recap with Ben
Baldwin. Oh, God. Is it bad?
I mean, I know the locks are bad. I know the locks are hilariously bad. I haven't looked at the entire thing,
I
obviously.
know that I had the Steelers. That's I'm just hanging my taking my hat, hanging it right there on the
The Seahawks got first in
Steelers.
Benison. He hung his hat on the Steelers and then it fell
I just
off.
literally, what are you thinking? You're just like, did we already talk about it? This is like the Harlem Globetrotters. You're like, I'm not feeling good about the Globetrotters this year, this
No,
game.
I don't think it's like the Harlem
Yes, it
Globetrotters.
is. Mike Tomlin has never, he's been a coach for basically our entire lives and has never gone under 500. And
Very old.
it's just like, but it's like everybody knows Mike Tomlin never goes under 500. But this year,
I mean, everything is true until it isn't. In that Seahawks 49ers game, it was the completion to John Ursua who was tackled at the one. They spiked it, had second and goal at the one, got the delay of game trying to bring Marshawn Lynch in. So then it was second and goal at the five, and then
how much
two
time?
straight 22 se 23 seconds after the spike
But no
started.
timeouts.
Yes. Otherwise, they probably should have taken the timeout. Two straight incompletions, one of them to Hollister, and then a completion to Hollister, who was tackled at the goal line. So.
Okay, can we just, I want to get this weekly podcast over with. I'm so sick of this. I hated this week. Everything about it. Christmas was fun. I hated everything sports-wise about this week.
Well, perhaps you will not hate about Seattle sports wise the Sun Bowl.
Oh, are we done? We're done with the Seahawks? Okay,
I
so
mean,
no
we're going to
further
come back.
Seahawks talk
I
next
know we're
week.
going to talk about Seahawks Rams at the end.
Why? Okay, you think there's an important thing to talk about?
I think there's multiple important things to talk about, but one particularly important thing to talk about.
Okay, fair enough.
But
But we
right
will be
now,
back soon with our, we haven't talked to him about it, but I assume he'll be interested. But with our Seahawks season in review with Ben Baldwin at some point in the future.
after week 18 is
We've got
completed.
a lot of just annual podcast to hit right now.
I'm well aware. Well aware.
Okay.
All right, so let's talk about the Seahawks and the Louisville Cardinals. We sort of previewed Louisville's season a few weeks ago when this matchup was set. Since then, we've learned a lot. We talked about their quarterback, Tyler Shough, opting out of the Sun Bowl. In addition to that, wide receiver Ja'Cory Brooks, edge Ashton Gallat, and cornerback Quincy Riley are all opt-outs. So it stands in contrast to the Huskies, who, because of their combination of seniors who are not really seriously NFL prospects and players who are going to be back next season, did not have a single player that we know of opt out besides for the players who have decided to transfer.
Hang the banner. Seniors who are not really NFL prospects
Well,
and not that many transfers.
if you're like Carson Bruno, you're not really opting out of the Sun Bowl. This is the last big moment, whether Carson Bruno is in an NFL training camp, down the road or not. This is the high point of his career. I mean, last year was the high point of his career, but this is the culmination of his career. So for Louisville, also backup
This
court.
is the high point of his career. Carson Bruner. He was
Did
like, yeah, the college football
play in
playoff
the
meant
college
one
football
thing.
championship game. Yes,
But
did
have you
play.
ever experienced El Paso?
In December. Not just El Paso. I'm sure there are lovely times of year in El Paso, but
Can we
December.
just get all bowl games sponsored by are Cheez-It and Pop-Tarts owned by the same brand? All companies are owned by one company, right?
Yeah, I believe it's Taco Bell, right? They won the
That's every
restaurant
restaurant,
war.
but I'm not even joking when I say that all companies are owned by one company. That's just a fact.
Cheez-Its are in fact part of Kellanova, which was Kellogg's. When did they add the Nova?
You see that villain overrun under Jay Wright? I added it myself.
They spun off Kellanova? Huh. Now I'm confused.
I think there was a was it the Knicks, right?
The Nova Knicks?
Yeah. They added a Nova too.
They are in fact both owned by Kellogg's,
Okay.
Cheez-Its and
So
Pop-Tarts.
the fine people at Kellogg's need to
So
do every bowl game.
you're saying we
Because
get the Eggo Waffle Bowl, that would slay.
these are the only good things about these bowl games,
The
right?
Pringles Bowl, the Rice Krispies
Is the
Bowl.
content. Just like, because it's winking, it's understanding that most of these bowl games, like, people don't care all that much about, right? We should be having fun doing them. Like, it's not serious. None of it is serious. I mean, the whole thing's stupid, the whole structure, everything in life, but a week of being a Seattle sports fan. But can we just get, like, what, who is the sponsor of the Alamo Bowl?
A Valero, last I checked.
Oh my God. It's like a gas company, right?
Yes.
They don't even have Texas toast.
I mean, they might, to be honest. Yes, it is still the Valero Alamo Bowl.
Anyway, it's just like you show up, you play a bowl game, you have been in El Paso, and then you go home. So we could preview this game, I guess.
Again, the high point. Well, yeah, I mean, I want to talk about this in a second, but
It matters for the Huskies. It does not matter for Louisville, but
that's exactly right.
this game does matter for, and I don't even know if winning and losing matters that much, but this game matters for the Huskies.
Backup quarterbacks Brady Allen and Pierce Clarkson have both submitted notifications of transfer, leaving Harrison Bailey as the only quarterback in the roster with any experience. True freshman Deuce Adams listed his backup in this game. I don't know if we talked about this specifically on the podcast, but I know we talked about it online, offline. Miller Moss from USC, who got benched after they lost at UW, is headed to Louisville as their next quarterback. So
Let him
this is.
play. I think this is the future of bowl games also, is that sometimes transfers can play immediately.
It does seem more logical. It would certainly like make the games more practical on a lot of levels. Harrison Bailey was 8 of 8 for 63 yards in 4 games this season. Most of those completions came against FCS opponent Austin Peay, but he does have some substantial experience in the past. He's on his third college team after starting his career at Tennessee and playing 1 season at UNLV. He was actually reasonably effective as a freshman starter for the Vols in 2 games, including 14, going 14 of 18 for 207 yards and 2 touchdowns in a win at Vanderbilt. But then he fell to third on the depth chart after Josh Heupel arrived and brought Hendon Hooker and Joe Milton as transfers, which has worked out very well for Tennessee. Bailey moved on to UNLV, where he played off the bench, had a career high 209 yards and a win over Nevada in the season finale in 2022, but then transferred again, has spent the last 2 years at Louisville not
Yeah,
playing.
what in the name of Sam Huard happened to this dude? Like, he just freaking.
He was a 4-star recruit, top 100 recruit in the country. Yeah. Very odd. Probably the biggest difference is he won't bring the rushing threat that Chuk did this season. He's got minus 21 career rushing yards.
Let's say fourth string quarterback from Louisville. I'm sure that there's a lot of big differences between Tyler Shough, who's pretty good this
No, he
year.
was the backup. He was not the 4-stringer. These other two just also transferred.
Okay, so he's
He
just
played
it.
more than them.
Got it. Okay.
Brooks was Ja'Cory Brooks, who's opted out, was far and away the team's leading receiver with 61 catches for 1,013 yards and 9 touchdowns. Chris Bell was the only other player with more than 240 receiving yards. Although Louisville is in the oddity of the way that eligibility works in the year of our Lord 2024, getting back Colin Lacey, who had 179 receiving yards in 4 games after returning from a collarbone fracture during fall camp, then decided after 4 games to sit out the remainder of the regular season to preserve his redshirt year. But because the bowl game does not count against the 4-game limit, he is back for this
I'm
one and
back.
will
I'm back.
start
Hello.
alongside Chris Bell, I should say. So they will have two proven receivers. The other candidate to step up is former UW tight end Mark Redmond, now on his third team after transferring to San Diego State after making one catch in 2021 as a redshirt freshman. Redmond had 239 yards and 3 touchdowns this season, but 408 yards as receiver in 2023 for the Aztecs. Louisville will have their entire complement of running backs, including 1,000-yard rusher Isaac Brown, who averaged 7.3 yards per carry and had 11 touchdowns, plus backup Duke Watson, also a freshman, who averaged 9 yards per carry with 7 touchdowns on just 57 carries. Cardinals were 8th nationally with 5.6 yards per carry, better than any team UW faced this season.
I mean, they were quite good. They would have been one of the best teams that UW faced all season. So, but I do think taking the starting quarterback out of the mix kind of changes things in that regard. I
And then
honestly don't know.
also on defense, their leader in both sacks, Gallant had 4.5, and Riley had a team high 13 passes defensed at cornerback. So two key starters there as well.
I don't know if this UW team, as they stand currently, not with incoming transfers, is good enough to stop any rushing attack, basically. I don't know if they have the kind of size to be able to do that. So I think that's the thing that we'll find out. Louisville is going to go into this game trying to run the ball. And I think
Oh,
the
yeah.
thing that it kind of reminds me the most of is not as much of an afterthought, but a couple of seasons ago when UW went into, I believe, was it also the Alamo Bowl against Texas?
Yes, that was the Alamo Bowl.
Also the Alamo Bowl, which times have changed. against Texas. Texas with without Bijan, but a victory there still kind of catapulted UW. Beating a team like that is still an important thing, and I think beating a team like Louisville still could be an important thing. The most important piece of it, though, is another basically game of reps for Damon Williams and seeing what Damon Williams can do starting from the very beginning, having an entire offense built around him, having a couple of weeks to have an entire offense built around him. If Damon cooks in this game, that's going to matter no matter who the defense is. That is going to be an important piece of information. Even if, because this, again, it's not like they're playing a bad team, even with the players opting out, like playing well against Louisville, and defensively they weren't. Louisville's not a bad defense overall.
No, I mean, they're good at everything. Yeah.
So it really is about what can Damon do in this offense, given the time, because, you know, the team is, they're preparing for this game like it's any other game, right? Like Jed is preparing packages and running this offense as if he's preparing for any Big Ten game. So if they do that against Louisville and it works, that's going to be an important piece of information to kind of see what the future may look like. And that's, to me, ultimately why it's important. If they give up 50 points, they give up 50 points. I don't think that's going to happen against this Louisville team, but like, I guess I care less about the defense, even though a lot of the defensive starters are coming back. There's just so many more players coming on defense, and especially in the linebacker position as well. And on the D-line.
There's a new defensive coordinator coming.
And a new defense coordinator.
As we'll talk about later in the pod.
Those things matter more to me than almost anything else. It's what does Damon do in this game? How does the offense look under Damon? That's it, period. A win would be nice, though, and a win in this game. It would feel good kind of propelling you to the next season. But beyond that, a lot of the roster is, you know, save for a small handful of players, the roster is already more or less made up for next year. And, you know, they're going to kind of start from scratch. But I think this will be a small glimpse of what the offense is going to look like under Damon in 2025.
But the line keeps moving in UW's direction, which I think is probably the correct way to go. It was 4.5, Louisville minus 4.5 to open. When I wrote this down, which I think was yesterday, it was Louisville minus 2.5. Now it is Louisville minus 1. So a lot of late money coming in on the Huskies. And I think that, you know, you compared it to Texas. This was longer ago in a very different era of bowl games, but I'm reminded of when the Huskies played Nebraska in the Holiday Bowl in 2010 and a situation where they had gotten blown out by Nebraska at home during the regular season. The infamous game after which I was told to burn your jersey.
Uh-huh.
About my like Jake Locker jersey. And in, I believe, Jake Locker's final game, the Huskies beat Nebraska in the Holiday Bowl in a rare rematch that season. And it's because being in the Holiday Bowl was a crushing disappointment for Nebraska, for a UW program that hadn't played in a bowl game since, I want to say, 2002 at that point. Like, it was an amazing outcome that they were playing in a bowl game at all. And I don't think we're quite in that situation with Louisville and UW. Like,
no, absolutely.
Obviously,
not.
A lot of these players were playing in the college football playoff championship game a year ago.
This is kind of a slap in the face for Louisville in a lot of ways, considering how good their regular season
is. No, that's what I'm saying, is they were a team that were thinking much of the year, we've got a chance to go to the playoff. For UW, just getting to a bowl game, given the turnover that they've had, was a win. And you've got the excitement about Damon Williams Jr. starting at quarterback and what the future could hold for him and Jonah Coleman being back. It's very different than a Louisville team that this is transitory. I mean, maybe, you know, Harrison Bailey is hoping to make a statement for the competition against Miller Moss, but like realistically, he's not going to be the starting quarterback at Louisville next year. So I do think UW has a much better chance in this game than you would say on paper.
I think they're going to win the game. And we should also just cherish any chance we have to watch Damon Williams play football. It's right now we're in that sweet spot of like, he's an exciting rookie, basically. He's a freshman, right? Yeah. And it's one of those moments where I think, you know, say, like, I'm not going to say as far as like Commanders fans with Jaden Daniels, because that's beyond this, but a little bit like Patriots fans with Drake May, where you're just like, I don't care what happens. I just want to watch this dude play because of what's to come. And
obviously, again, this was very different, but we watched the Pro Bowl because we were so excited about watching Russell Wilson play in 2012 during his rookie season. I don't even know what they do with the Pro Bowl now. It's a flag football game. Is that it?
I don't know. That's part of it. They just have like mini games, basically.
Right. But the NBA has All-Star game is broken. Like, it's just
what are you talking about? talking about? Everybody knows the Pro Bowl follows it up with the most important sporting event of the year in all of the world. The most important sporting event that there is.
Which is this dumb thing that people are like, why can't the NBA figure out its All-Star game? And it's like, bro, did you see when the baseball All-Star game ended in a fucking tie? Did you like,
how long ago was that though? They've definitely fixed it since then.
I don't know. It's still not fixed with pitchers. Like, it's still like a problem. But the baseball All-Star game is clearly the best All-Star game. Like, hockey already does the thing the NBA is trying to do this year.
I think All-Star games in general are just a problem. Why are you so you're very weirdly personally hurt about this? It's Kendrick Lamar raps about being on the halftime performance of the Super Bowl. At no point has any rapper ever been like, they got me at halftime of the NBA All-Star game.
I mean, I agree with that. My point is not that the comparison is the Super Bowl. My point is people are like, why is this peculiar thing that the NBA All-Star game is no good? And it's like, all the All-Star games are bad. That's what you just said. And people don't, and the NBA are like so NBA tunnel visioned that they cannot see that this happens in every sport. So anyways, percentage chances of victory for this game?
I think it's like 72%.
Whoa, that's a little higher than I'm willing to go. I guess the other comparison I was going to make for this one is the Indiana game this season, where the Huskies are playing against a backup quarterback against this elite offense, and particularly an elite rushing attack. So if Louisville gets the lead and is able to maintain the lead the entire game, I do think Louisville could easily just outclass the Huskies in this one, arm's length in the entire way.
I think Louisville just doesn't care.
I mean, I'm sure that some Louisville, many Louisville players do care. I think the Huskies probably should be favored because I don't think that's a likely scenario. But
I think
again,
it should be Huskies minus like 6.
You could look very bad for this bold prediction. When
I mean, whatever.
I
couldn't though, because it doesn't matter. Well, but like, the game is going to end, and we're never. I could. Like, looking back on boy, it's not like playoff games where I'm like, I remember more or less every playoff game. It's like UW played Boise State and beat them, and I'm like, oh, I kind of remember that, right? The most memorable one was beating Southern Miss. It was beating our boy Nick Mullins.
And that's
just because it was the Zaxby's Heart of Dallas Bowl.
Exactly. You're correct. The sponsor
that's what I'm
is
saying.
Crucial.
Put us in the Pop-Tart Bowl. Right? I'll remember that. You send me to a Vegas Bowl, I'm not going to remember any Vegas Bowls. That's a vow. I vow to never remember a Vegas Bowl.
I mean, I covered a Vegas Bowl in person, so I remember that very well. It was the changeover between Chris Peterson and Jimmy Lake, and expectations were running high for the Jimmy Lake era, which we'll talk about a possible parallel to that in a bit.
Anyway, okay. What's next?
All right, now we're getting back into the regular order of things. So we start with our one toast this week. A congrats to Elle Ladine, who became the fourth UW women's basketball player ever to score 40 plus points in a game during Saturday's win at Northwestern, which was also the Huskies' first ever win in Big Ten play. Ladine shot 15 of 25 from the field, including 6 of 10 from three, also had 6 assists in 36 minutes. She joins three Huskies who previously had topped 40 points in a game. Kelsey Plum did it 6 times, which is why her jersey is going to be retired in 3 weeks here. Juliana Mendiola, who overlapped with me. We were the same class at UW. And then Amber Melgoza were the previous
Juliana
ones.
Mendiola, today. Italian legend.
She was
Mendiola
balling.
Sisters.
Julian Gioconda.
I literally, every team you talk about, I'm just like, where? I'm really like desperately looking. UC Riverside Athletics, assistant women's basketball coach.
Julie?
Yeah.
Nice. What are you desperately looking for?
To figure out who your Seattle sports figure of the year is.
Okay,
star. What do we call it? Star?
Figure.
Figure? Okay. Your Seattle sports figure of the year. I just literally cannot. Every team, I'm like, are they from that team? No. Everything horrible happened to them.
All right. Well, look, you won't be guessing too much longer, I suppose. As we get briefly into the roundup, Mariners, they can continue to not transact.
Same meme. Hope you're hungry.
Seattle Kraken, though, had an exciting game on Saturday. Vince Dunn scored the winner on a breakaway in overtime as they rallied from a 4-1 deficit in the final 5 minutes to beat the Canucks in Vancouver, scoring the tying goal in the last minute of regulation, within a minute of scoring their third goal in this game. Per the NHL, it was just the third time in league history a team had come back to win down 3 goals in the final 5 minutes. So an impressive comeback probably won't mean anything for the Kraken. They're back home this weekend for a 4-game homestand this week, including the first ever matchup with Utah Hockey Club. And I can already tell this is going to be a fierce rivalry between the Kraken and Hockey Club.
With the hockey club. You know, I love that name. That's my favorite name.
I do know you love that name. Oh, the only person who loves that name more than you is Luca.
Does he love the hockey club name?
I think so. I think he finds those kind of nicknames very
Juliana
hilarious.
Mendiola played in 6 games in 2004 with the Sacramento
Sacramento
women's
Monarchs.
basketball team.
Yeah.
What were they called? The Monarchs?
She was like furious with the Storm after they did not draft her in that year's draft. I forget who they drafted in the third round. They probably should have
If
just.
you can come up with that one for the third round pick in 2000, I
Why?
you would probably be up there with the only people in the world who could do that.
That year they drafted in the first round Trina Frierson from Louisiana Tech, but I don't know if I could tell you their third round pick.
Washed. Did they
Wow.
have a second round pick?
I want to say they
This
didn't have a second round pick in 2004. Oh, that was the
2004.
second round pick. They had traded their first round pick. That's right. And they did
They
not
won the
have a third
championship that
round
year.
pick. That was the year they went on to win the championship.
Do you know who the first pick in the draft was?
2004,
Yeah.
a Diana Taurasi. No,
No.
but it wasn't. Oh, she was 2003.
I
No,
guess
she
so.
was two.
Oh,
No, she
never
was
mind. Never
2004.
mind.
Yeah,
Never mind. I'm looking at the wrong thing. Okay.
it's Diana
Yes, Diana
Taurasi.
Taurasi was the first pick in the draft. I was looking at the dispersal draft, which is for some reason on Wikipedia on top.
Yes.
Benny Lennox
There you
went to the
yes.
Rockers or went to the.
No, the
Oh,
Storm took
there was a
her.
dispersal draft because the Rockers folded,
Yeah, that's how the
and
Storm
the
got
Storm
Benny
got Benny
Lennox.
Lennox. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, do you know who the first pick was in the dispersal draft?
Penny Taylor.
There you go.
Phoenix, like,
Not
Phoenix
washed anymore.
had
Not
the
washed.
most amazing offseason of all time. Like, they picked the best year, 1 year to be bad in WNBA history because you drafted Diana Taurasi, the all-time leading scorer in WNBA history with the number one pick in the rookie draft. And then in the dispersal draft, I consider Penny Taylor to be perhaps the single most underrated player in WNBA history.
Really?
And also, really, an amazing outcome for Diana Taurasi and Penny Taylor, who are married to each other.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
This year, this particular offseason was like set in place their entire the whole thing.
Yeah, that's actually,
Wow.
that's a good story someday. If Diana comes back, maybe I'll pitch that.
How one dispersal draft. How the loss of the Cleveland Rockers led to the WNBA's greatest romance.
I'm not pitching a biopic in a world where
It's
the Cleveland Rockers have folded. Love sprung.
it's like a Hallmark movie,
Drafted.
but the Rockers are folding.
Will I still even be able to play basketball?
The Storm did have a second round pick though in this year.
It was exclusively a second round pick. They had traded their first round pick, number 6 overall, as part of the trade to get Jahnel Buress and Cherise Sam to build that year's championship
Do you know who
team.
that player was?
Nicole Oldie.
Did you get the second round pick?
Yeah, that's who I named as their first round pick, Trina
See,
Frierson.
Trina Frierson.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. Well, not as washed as you thought.
Nicole Oldie, my favorite thing is people used to refer to her as a young Lauren Jackson because she came into the league and LJ had already won MVP. And Nicole Oldie was older at the time. It's still older. She will always be older than Lauren Jackson. So, all right. UW women's basketball. In addition to Ladine's big game, Huskies got a double-double on Saturday from Delia Daniels with 20 points and 15 rebounds. All-around impressive performance to blow out Northwestern by 19 in their first Big Ten road game. They remain on the road and also will be playing on New Year's Eve morning at Illinois at 10 a.m. Pacific time against an Illini team that is off to an 11-2 start and beat Oregon on Saturday. Then the Huskies are back home Tuesday to face Wisconsin, which is 10-3, beat Rutgers in its Big Ten opener. Lost by 31 at Indiana on Saturday, has no wins over teams ranked in the Bartorvik top 100. So this should be a chance for the Huskies to get their first Big Ten home win.
All right.
You know, men's basketball, a game I'm sure you paid a lot of attention to, blew out NJIT
I actually kind of had it up, not up, but just like I pulled it up on my phone a couple of times.
in their final non-conference matchup on Sunday, 90-53. They never trailed, went up 20 at halftime. Eight different Huskies scored at least 8 points, and they made 10 three-pointers, including three from Christian King off the bench and a pair from Wilhelm Breidenbach, who got the start
Hello.
and his return from concussion protocol. Breidenbachers unite.
There it is. That's why I told Luca he was shooting hoops, and I was like, "Ah, oh, he actually hit a couple threes." And I was like, despite knowing nothing about the MEAC,
So you think he's gonna hear you if you yell loud enough?
yeah,
Okay.
it's sort of an Arrested Development bit too. I'll explain to you. I know we have to explain our references on here.
Love the
Anyway,
guest footnotes.
he was knocking down some threes, and I was like, he kind of has to throw home Breidenbach range.
There you
So,
go.
yeah, it wasn't a compliment, but it wasn't an insult either.
Wilhelm Breidenbach complimentary. Now, after playing one of the worst teams in Division One, the Huskies gauntlet begins. All seven of their January opponents are ranked in the KenPom top 30.
Oh my God.
That starts this weekend with Maryland and Illinois visiting Heck Ed in the opening of true Big Ten play. On Thursday, it's the Terrapins who are 11-2 with losses at home to Marquette and at Purdue. Their best win came against Ohio State at home. They are led by NBA prospect Derek Queen, a potential one-and-done player who is averaging 16.8 points and 8.8 boards.
Gotta look him up.
Also notably, Angel Reese's, because you're going to this game, right?
I am.
Also notably,
It's kind of fun. I think it's fun.
Angel Reese, it's fun until you go to the game.
No, it'll be fun either way going to see Maryland. It's like otherwise I could be seeing Arizona State. You know what I
True.
mean?
Angel Reese's brother Julian leads the team with 9.1 rebounds per game. He's also averaging 12 points, so he's a
How did
key
he end up
player
at
for them.
Maryland? Not.
She started at Maryland. They're from Baltimore.
Wait, really?
She transferred to LSU. I watched Angel Reese play a game at Maryland in the NCAA tournament. Her final game, I believe, at Maryland,
And I
as it
brought her
turned
to
out.
LSU, huh?
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, NIL. I don't know.
They're from Baltimore. That's cool.
Yeah.
St. Francis Academy. All right. Well, Derek Queen is also from Baltimore. That's Angel. I guess Maryland probably mines a lot of players from Baltimore.
One would think. One would think.
I mean, they also have DC. Like it kind of feels like Maryland has a pretty storied history overall, but it feels like they should maybe even be better than they are.
Yes, I think that's probably true. I mean, I think part of it is the fact that they are in the Big Ten and not playing against all the teams that they have a storied history against. I mean, I guess it was the right decision, objectively speaking, given how many of those teams would love to leave the ACC for the
That's what I
Big
was
Ten
going to
at this
say. Those
point.
teams will be in the Big
But
Ten eventually, but
yes, for now, they don't have. It's not like they came in with Oregon and with USC and UCLA. Like, at least we have some of our rivals in the Big Ten. They have none of them.
this is one of the better Maryland teams in a while. Is that right?
I mean, they've consistently been like competitive. I don't know.
They've
I
always been pretty good.
right.
And
Like they've
their biggest run was in the 90s, the sort of consistent, like Steve Franchise, Juan
No,
Dixon run.
it was the early 2000s when they won the national
That's what I'm
championship.
saying. Yeah. Okay. So it's the 90s with Steve Francis all the way through the like Juan Dixon team that won the national championship.
Yes, in 2002 was when they won the national championship. They made the Final Four back-to-back years, Sweet 16 three times, 4 times in 5 years. So some very good. They made the Sweet 16 under Mark Turgeon in 2016, but have not advanced past round two since then. I
We'd
mean,
be
they've
happy
had,
to sniff an NCAA tournament.
I agree. And they were projected, according to KenPom, to be a three seed in 2020. That would have been Mark Turgeon's potentially best team.
Oh, when the tournament was canceled.
Correct. They went 24-7, 14-6 in Big Ten play that year.
I'm
And
fascinated to
then
watch him.
I don't know, I guess they fired Mark Turgeon and then they hired Danny Manning and went 7-13 in Big Ten play and 15-17 overall and fired him after one season. So that didn't go
Wow.
super great. I mean,
that's pretty strange in college basketball to fire a coach after one season.
yes, it was definitely an unusual situation. So Kevin Willard's in his third year there. He took them to the he was at Seton Hall before
Oh,
that.
yeah, Gravis Vasquez. Oh, yeah.
Took them to the NCAA tournament as a number 8 seed in 2023. Last year they were 7-13 in Big Ten play, 16-17 overall. They were 16-17 overall despite rating 62nd on KenPom, which I believe wins you the Pac-12 most years.
Oh, yeah. Also, my boy Blazers legend Steve Blake.
Yes. I mean, Maryland is an incredible legacy of players.
Steve Blake played so many places, but for some reason, I feel like the Blazers is kind of like his team,
Oh,
right?
yeah. Yeah.
He did play with them three separate times, I
He was an
suppose.
assistant coach there for a while. Yeah. Steve Blake is surely a Blazer. All right. On Sunday, it's Illinois, the Illini, who had made a deep NCAA
They must be
tournament
bad,
run
right?
last year with Terrence Shannon Jr., who's now in the NBA, off to a 9-3 start. They're two of those three losses have come to top 10 KenPom opponents in Alabama and Tennessee. They also lost their Big Ten opener at Northwestern in OT, but have three top 50 victories. And they're led by two outstanding international freshmen, Lithuanian guard Kasparis Jakučionis and Croatian center Tomislav Ivicic are their two leading scorers. So a lot of good freshmen at Heck Ed this weekend.
And
None
none
of
on the
them will be
Huskies.
playing. No.
Zoop's
No.
fine. Zoop's
Yeah, Zoop
fine.
Diallo's had a very, very solid freshman season. All right, this brings us back to Husky football in the news portion of this week's podcast, including that they're reportedly set to hire former Purdue coach Ryan Walters as their defensive coordinator, with overwhelming media reports that Steve Belichick, you'll never believe this, is going to North Carolina to join his dad, Bill,
Wow.
as defensive coordinator and
Wow.
presumably head coach in waiting. So Ryan Walters, I would say, had a lot of similarities to Jimmy Lake as a hot young defensive coordinator. First at Missouri, where the defense improved from 92nd in FPI when he was in a like Lake in a co-defensive coordinator job, was promoted to the full defensive coordinator in 2020, and the defense improved to or in 2018, I should say, and the defense improved to 16th and 25th his first 2 years, did drop to 93rd in that shortened 2020 season before Walters moved to Illinois, where the Illini too made a huge jump defensively from 99th in FPI in 2020 to 37th, and then finished 6th in 2022 when they had a young
You,
man
we
named
know
Devin
why. We know
Witherspoon.
why. That defense was mean. That Illinois defense, in hindsight.
I mean, it wasn't just him, right? They had other,
Johnny Newton.
legit NFL guys. On the strength of that, he got the head coaching job at Purdue as Jeff Brohm's replacement. The Illinois defense fell apart, but there are, I would say, few positives to take from Walter's 2 seasons in Purdue at Purdue as a head coach. Their offense collapsed under his chosen offensive coordinator, Graham Harrell, who was fired 4 games into 2024.
Oh man, he was
But
like
the
Texas Tech quarterbacks are it right now. It's like everybody, any Texas Tech quarterback could be the guy as an offensive coordinator or a quarterback.
But the defense got worse too. They went from 61st in FPI efficiency in 2022 to 89th in 2023, then 125th this past season, early, easily worst of any power conference team, which got Walters fired as head coach after 2 years. He's age 38, played safety at Colorado from 2005 through 2008, which was before they were in the Pac-12. And his dad was a quarterback at Colorado in the 1980s. So a lot of ties there. So again, we hope it was basically an issue of like his attention was too divided as a head coach, and you put him back in the defensive
There are some
coordinator role.
people. Okay, a couple of thoughts on this. There are some people who are just better as coordinators than they are as head coaches,
Without
right?
question, probably a
There are some
lot.
people who also got the job too early. He might not have been ready for this job, right? But I think the most important piece is Purdue is a really fucking hard place to win. And it's not like an easy
Is it?
program. You don't think so?
I mean,
Name a good Purdue team that didn't have Drew Brees as their starting quarterback. I'm sure there are some, but.
but Jeff Brohm got the job at Louisville, or wait, he's the coach at Louisville, right? No, where is the coach? He played at Louisville, but he was successful. He didn't get fired. He left. You can't fire me. I quit. Yes, he is the head coach at Louisville, which is the team that you're playing this weekend.
I mean, he's doing a good job. But I guess the thing is, just by somebody else being successful there, we're not comparing Jeff Brohm to, because Jeff Brohm is pretty widely known as a good coach, right?
Right.
He led Louisville to, I mean, like, you look at these two seasons back to back, they're 8-4 this year and they were also good. And he had a couple of good seasons at Purdue. He was there for a long time though, right? When you look at his time at Purdue, 7-6, 6-7, 4-8, 2-4, 9-4, 8-5.
I mean, I agree that it's hard to win at like an extremely high level at these types of places.
But also to have that kind of turnaround that quickly, you know, I assume some talent left. Obviously, I don't know that much about the 2022 to 2023 Purdue seasons, but like some talent is going to leave when your head coach leaves. It is an extraordinarily hard job to do. And what we're not talking about is Ryan Walters an elite head coach? The answer to that right now is no, right? We have the answer to that question about Ryan Walters as a head coach, but we're not hiring him as head coach. And I think that's the most important piece here. Can Ryan Walters be an elite defensive coordinator? And I think the answer to that is almost certainly yes. He's got a couple of years, right, of this experience. It's good to have that experience under your belt, to have done it, to have been the head coach, to have seen what it looks like. Now going back to a smaller role and not having to worry as much about those things, Jed Fitch seems like the type of coach who's very willing to let defensive coordinators kind of take that piece and really, and I'm sure that's part of the reason he wanted this job coming off head coaching, right? Ryan Walters right. wasn't done necessarily, but to be able to take the defense and kind of mold it the way that they want to mold it and do their thing. You could give a lot of credit to the talent on the Illinois defense, but like Devin Witherspoon wasn't a high recruit, if I recall correctly. You know, I think Lovie Smith may have recruited.
You wouldn't have been at Illinois if you were a higher recruit. No.
Exactly. If Brett Bielema and Lovie Smith, they might have just been excellent at Tommy DeVito as the starting quarterback. Oh my God, I love it. But to develop the players, right? Where's Sidney Brown now? Eagles? That's what I thought, right? Yeah. So they have like Sidney Brown, Devin Witherspoon, Johnny Martin, Quan Martin. Like the team had some good players, but there's kind of a reality of I there's a line of blue chip, 5-star players are probably going to be good almost anywhere they go, right? Or not. If they're going to be good, they're probably going to be good. Then there's this pool of players who are kind of like 1 through 4 stars a lot of the time. And they're any individual player that you pick them out can be like, oh, this person can turn into a star, an NFL caliber player as a college player. But a lot of those players, the difference between them and somebody else at a similar school is coaching overall. And that's why you look at Jimmy Lake and the kind of generation of, we've seen them playing against us in a lot of these fucking Husky or Seahawks games that we've seen, these corners from those Jimmy Lake defenses, right? They're still good right now. And you can kind of trace it all the way back to maybe Chris Peterson was elite at going, and Jimmy Lake were elite at going and finding those diamond in the rough type players. Or maybe the coaching that they got when they were young and the work ethic, all the different things, it's kind of like you get set on a path, right? And once you
answer is inevitably probably both.
It's always both options, but coaching matters a lot to this. And maybe Devin Witherspoon just would have been a beast anywhere he went, but maybe Ryan Walters and his ability to coach there set this, you know, Illinois defense up in a lot of ways. And then once you're head coach, it's hard to focus on just one position group, especially if that just one position group is the defense. So it could even be the reason why it's harder for defensive coaches to be head coaches at the NFL or in defense, that it's easier to be able to focus. If you have to focus on one position group as a head coach, it's easier to do that when it's the offense. But if it's the defense, you just kind of can't, and you're ignoring the offense. That's hard to do. That's a harder thing to do than if it's an offensive coach. I think the best setup overall for any football program is to have an offensive head coach and a really, really good defensive coordinator. And I think that's basically what Jed Fish is trying to build here. So
without question,
I'm pretty excited about this hire overall to be able to dip in this pool. The other thing is I don't know if Purdue has any transfer players that would be of interest, but people from in-house, they have their relationships, but a lot of their relationships with players are with the players who are already in the building. That's important. We saw Steve Belichick taking Quarry House to North Carolina. And that piece matters, but Ryan Walters has all sorts of different relationships outside as head coach. He has those relationships with players that he was recruiting at Purdue. And that's something that can pay off. We'll see this season. It's probably a little bit too late to pay off this season, but long-term to be able to do that. He's another person who's been in the Big Ten. He's scouted all these Big Ten teams, right? He's familiar with how it's structured. He's looked at it in a different way. So I think it could be very beneficial to the Jedfish coaching staff overall. He's thinking about this. This is an NFL hire. And I think college football, as we've seen, Jedfish is trying to run an NFL-style program at UW. Same thing Bill Belichick is trying to do at North Carolina, right? And Jedfish, in this moment, went out and made the most NFL hire you could do. The head coach of another team didn't work out there doing that. Bringing them in as defensive coordinator, that happens all the time in the NFL. And it works a lot of the time, too. You can see it.
Now, one thing Walters doesn't have is NFL experience along the lines of a lot of the assistants that, Jedfish brought in last year. So it's a little bit from that standpoint, but I do like what you said, that this is not Jedfish going out and getting his guy. This is someone who has had no connection with Jedfish that we know of. I don't know that he's even played against Jedfish.
They've never even met.
He doesn't even know his name.
He did one of those things where it's like you could choose Coach X or Coach Y blind on the internet. Then you'd have a picture.
But, you know, teams will often talk about we're doing a nationwide search for a head coach. And obviously, like, it led them to the same conference. But, like, this was a case of we're going to go out there and fire who we think is the best defensive coordinator we can get, not just the guy I'm most familiar with.
I think it's awesome. And I think the relationships piece is a big one, too.
So it sounds like this could be the only change for UW. ESPN's Pete Thamel, my colleague, reported that UW is not expecting any other staff changes besides Belichick's departure for North Carolina, which is interesting.
Let me give you a bold prediction. We see Devin Witherspoon on the sidelines of a Husky game next year.
Oh, I would hope so. I mean, I don't know what the schedule looks like necessarily, but
that shit matters too. When you're talking to recruits, Devin Witherspoon is like rising star in the world of defensive players that people are going to look up to. Right. Every player that comes along who's like a fast, hard hitting secondary player is going to be like, he moves like Devin Witherspoon. Right. He's kind of entered that world of, it's so funny how quick it can happen, but like people are going to emulate him or try to like talk about him as somebody you want to play like.
Compare themselves to him. Yes. Yeah. Aspirationally. All right. A couple little bit of transfer news. Huskies have added a pair of commitments. I mean, this is part of why Walters is not going to, I mean, to the extent that he hasn't maybe already been having some of these conversations in the past week or so, be influential in next year's roster. Because Huskies have already added a shit ton of transfers on defense for 2025.
Never enough.
The latest is Washington State linebacker Buda Oukda. An Inglewood High School product who spent 3 years in Pullman taking a redshirt in 2022. Made 5 starts as a redshirt freshman, then started all 12 regular season games as a sophomore and middle linebacker, finishing with a team-high 76 tackles during the regular season and 3 interceptions as well as 4 fumble recoveries. He'll have 2 seasons of eligibility remaining. So Huskies now have brought in basically 3 starting caliber players at off-ball linebacker, which, you know, I think is very exciting given that number one, wait, is Jacob Manu?
Yeah.
That he only has 1 year of eligibility remaining and then is coming off that injury in case that lingers a little bit. You've got 2 guys with extensive starting experience now in X-Ray Alexander and Oukda.
Yeah, they've really remade this room. I'm looking up the Purdue transfer portal and they had a safety transfer to the team from down south. Obviously, their star transfer this season is Max Clare, committed to Ohio State. He was tight end. That just wasn't going to happen. But Nyland Green, it really depends on like, did these players like Ryan Walters, you know,
were they transferring? Yeah. After he got fired or before he got fired?
Nyland Green listed as a 4-star. He's a cornerback. That could be one. Jeffrey Mbah, defensive lineman, also listed as a 4-star in the transfer portal. There are players out there, I guess is what I'll say. This isn't necessarily.
Well, the question is how many spots and how much money there is realistically for UW to go out and continue to add players. I mean, I think cornerback is one spot where, depending on what happens with Thaddeus Dixon, that they might be able to. But also, they may just want to keep Thaddeus Dixon now that he has additional eligibility. Their other new transfer commitment is Texas wide receiver Jonte Cook II. Cook was a 5-star prospect in the 2023
I think
class.
Don't sleep on Nyland Green.
Played just 200. I mean, if you want to do a bold prediction.
No, I'm just saying, this is literally, I'm just learning about him right now, but transferred from Georgia, initially committed to Georgia, now transferring from Purdue. It was after, I don't know when Ryan Walters was fired, but he entered the portal like 6 days ago or something.
Okay, so very recently.
He's listed as the 42nd ranked transfer, according to Rivals. I'm just telling you right now, you don't want to hire somebody for that. Like, that's not why they're hiring Ryan Walters, but it's not terrible news to kind of open up that door and just be like, well, shit, you know, if you like the if you like playing for this defense, I'm sure it wasn't the players who got Ryan Walters fired. The team just didn't, they weren't good. So, and they were slaughtered in some of these games, but we've kind of seen like you can have good individual players overall, and somebody like that being slotted in this Husky defense is different than being slotted in Purdue.
I agree.
Okay, anyway.
Jonte Cook II, five-star prospect in the 23 class, played just 239 snaps in two seasons to the Longhorns per PFF via Christian
very
Capel.
Very deep Longhorns wide receivers, though. Like, this is not a there's maybe a level of talent that just pushes you straight, the Ryan Williams or whatever, pushes you straight onto the field, but this is a very deep wide receiver room for Texas had these last two seasons.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, some of those guys from 2023 are now in the NFL and making big plays on a regular basis. Totaled 16 catches for 273 yards with two TDs. Basically identical stats both years, but this year he left the team in November, having not caught a pass since September. Played against the Huskies in last year's Sugar Bowl in the CFP semifinals, but did not record any stats.
And there was, you know, just like looking back at it after he committed, the teams that people thought he was going to, more often than not, people are like, he's staying in the SEC. He's going to, and it wasn't, he's going to Vanderbilt, right? This was, he's staying in the SEC and going to Florida, Georgia, places like that. Other people had him projected to the team from down south. This was a huge one for the Huskies when they needed, they didn't, I know you don't like that word. It would have been very nice to have come up with a wide receiver in this class to pair with Denzel Boston. This is a massive commitment for Damon Williams. Right now, you're looking at that Husky offense next year, and you're thinking it with an offensive line, this could be pretty juicy. Overall, adding in Jonte Cook, he's going to be a beast. Like, this is one I think we should be very excited about.
And I think what people specifically expect is him is a deep threat. You know, Denzel Boston was really terrific. Not that he's incapable of catching deep passes. He certainly is. But where he really excels is using his body, a lot of slants, that sort of thing around the line of scrimmage. And Cook is a deep threat to open things up. Let Jonte Cook.
It's just beautiful. It is a beautiful thing. Jonte Cook, come on. Give me all of it. But this is also as a commitment for, I'm trying to think, if there's anybody like this that UW has ever signed in the transfer portal.
Like this big of a prospect initially?
This big of a prospect went to such a large school. There have been, you know, like Jeremy Bernard went to Michigan State over UW. It's kind of not the same, right? Went to Michigan State. Jeremy could have gone some other places, but a commitment at this level with the pedigree and the school that he went to and the expectation that he was going to go to, basically a blue blood program like that. This is Jed big fish hunting right now.
Wow. There you go. But no, like, I can't think of anyone off the top of my head.
I mean, the transfer era has not been that long. And you look at it, it's like Jeremiah Hunter, not really, right? Jeremiah Hunter was a cow beforehand. He had other opportunities. There are players who had other big opportunities, but this is kind of the biggest signing. And in a position like wide receiver, I understand those teams got wide receivers, but everybody always needs more.
So what you're saying
except
is
for Texas.
He's a better transfer commit than Michael Penix Jr. That's what I've heard you say.
That's not what I'm saying, but as a commit, Michael Penix Jr. was not.
He was our second choice.
Like, it was like, all right. Well, I mean, not that the first choice would have been bad. It's just, for the second choice at 2 years of eligibility and not one.
Has not worked out as well in the NFL for Jake Haener, alas. Michael Penix Jr., we kind of glossed over this. He threw the game-tying touchdown pass at the end of regulation.
Darn. He had a couple throws that he missed just a little bit, but I'm like, this is your first NFL or second NFL start?
Second NFL, sorry. He was throwing line drives.
I was like,
that was
oh
his,
my God, Penix.
Wait, was the game-tying touchdown his first NFL?
That was his first NFL touchdown.
Yeah, that's a wild scenario, and then wasn't his fault in overtime. Never touched the ball. Never saw it.
So, he might have missed some receivers a little bit, but he didn't say not to call a timeout. Raheem, let it run.
There was a lot of time left as they ended up getting the ball back in regulation. I did wonder a little bit whether they should have gone for two in that situation.
It changes things, though. They
it was probably too early.
No, but also then. Washington wins on a field goal if they go for two.
I agree. That's the case. That's why they shouldn't have done it.
They
definitely
anyway.
Had that thought.
I understand that they lost anyway, but when they got the ball back, they should have won the game. It doesn't matter. It wasn't going to matter. The Seahawks, come on. It would have been fun to have seen Mike Penix win, but like,
I just wanted the game next week to matter. Like, they could have put it Saturday before all these other games.
Have you ever considered the sweet release of death? We just don't have to care.
All right, well, we'll get to that in a second,
I've
but
already I've lamented it enough. I already mourned it when it came to,
you mourned it when they lost to the Giants.
well, shit. No, when Akella Witherspoon fucking caught the ball, it didn't hit the ground. I was just like,
And
that had to have.
yeah, I think like, there was a lot of commentary online of being surprised that that was ruled a catch. Like the rule is,
It
as
was a
long as you
catch.
have the ball, if you catch the ball beforehand, the ground can assist in the catch as long as the ball does not move. That was
That's
almost
what the rule
like
should be, too. The
that
rule
was
is
like
right.
that's the play they will show in the future when they are explaining the rule. It was
No, he
that
caught it.
textbook.
If he didn't catch that ball, it's like when you're playing with your friends or whatever, somebody catches that, you're like, that's a catch.
Rule of cool. Zach Ertz, they looked at it very briefly, but that was also a catch
That was a catch, too. I looked at it
without
and I was like,
question.
yep, that was a catch.
So
Both of them. I can't believe that happened to us twice on catches that were like, damn, can't
that
believe
is
we caught that.
pretty wild. New
One
notification
that
of
important than
transfer.
the other.
Yes, new notification of transfer for the Huskies. Safety Justin Harrington, who was one of the apparent seniors on UW's 2024 roster, who gained an additional year of eligibility with the NCAA's ruling on JUCOs, played sparingly after transferring from Oklahoma. So no surprise, he plans to look elsewhere for his extra year. I'm sure that he was not in the Huskies' plans. And then Elijah Jackson has now committed to TCU to continue his career. I don't know if they have
Nice.
Texas. It would be fun if he got to play against Texas again. All right, so what do
I'm
we?
sure they do not.
So Seahawks Rams on Sunday. The Rams may have the number three seed to play for if the Buccaneers win their game versus New Orleans at 10 a.m. Eastern. Although how much benefit there is to finishing third depends on two factors. Number one, which they won't know obviously ahead of time, does Minnesota win in Detroit on Sunday Night Football, which would make the Lions the number five seed and a team that you desperately want to avoid, because if it's Minnesota is the five seed and then Washington is the six seed, which they get with wins, a win at Dallas or a Green Bay loss to Chicago. So very likely that Washington after that win on Sunday night will be the six seed. And Minnesota or Washington, kind of a wash, frankly. Do you really care who of those two
They're
teams you
both going to be
play?
favored. Either of those teams is going to be favored.
I don't know if they'll be favored, but I think it'll probably be close to.
Minnesota will definitely be favored.
I think they will be favored, but I think it'll be close to a toss-up. Like
Also,
I
who
bet
cares?
they'd.
Why are we talking about this? I don't even hate the Rams already got their fraudulent Super Bowl. Like,
So the spread went. It was Rams minus 2.5 on Sunday afternoon before we knew that they had clinched the strength of victory tiebreaker. The Seahawks are now 3-point favorites. So Vegas is telling you they do not think the Rams are going to play their
Matt
players
Stafford's not playing.
on Sunday.
Matt Stafford is the best quarterback in NFL history who's never done a good thing in his entire life. He's literally not played a good game. Matt Stafford is so bad. I feel like I'm like a crazy person being like this run that the Rams are on. They're like, wow, what an impressive run. Stafford is getting credit for this. Are you aware of that? He played one good game. I understand that they beat the Bills. I don't know how it happened either. But then you look after that, and they tried so hard against all of these teams to lose, and they still couldn't lose. Give their defense credit. How
And
did we let them get Jared Verse? But, like,
their last three games, they have totaled 44 points.
I wouldn't mind flipping Byron Murphy for Jared Verse right about now,
Stafford has
but
not thrown for 200 yards in any of these
he is
games.
so bad.
It is, wow, it is truly
It's
shocking.
just
Should the Seahawks prefer to face Matthew Stafford rather than Jimmy G in this game?
Oh, I forgot he was their backup.
Yes, that came up on the Discord.
He is the. It's just shocking to me. But I think back to all of these moments throughout the season, and it's just like, ah, like the Bills not winning that game against the Rams. Like, how did that happen? Literally looking at the Rams for the entire season, how is there this one game that they managed to win a shootout against the Bills in? Like, what alchemy happened that made that game happen? And to have that victory, and you're just like, that's it. All of these stupid moments, right? The face mask play, when you look back, I remember being there in October being like, it doesn't matter that much, right? You're such an idiot before the season. You're like, ah, we'll figure it out. We'll be fine. And the stupid face mask play that they don't call against the Vikings, and then they win that game. It's just like, this Rams team won all of these stupid games in lieu. They'll get crushed in the first round. They're not a
I
good
mean,
team. They have a negative point differential. They are not a good team.
I don't think the reason that we thought that the Vikings Rams play wouldn't matter was because of the fact that, like, We were
the
so
Rams were going to
optimistic
win the NFC West.
the Seahawks were going to be ahead of the Rams. It was more like we weren't even thinking at the Seahawks at that level at that point, were we?
I think we were. I was still holding out hope.
I suppose so. I guess they were probably technically first in the NFC, and they were coming off the Falcons win,
We
which
freaking
was a
outplay.
big
I
one.
feel like Kirk Herbstreit, the Seahawks should be in the playoffs over the Rams. Do
I
it
mean,
by point differential. Don't do it by records. They'd still be in, even if there was a committee, because these people don't know ball and they can't see how fucking terrible the Rams are. They are a bad team.
the committee would definitely pick the Rams.
Oh, Matt Stafford's like in. I literally do not know what Matt Stafford did. Has he ever been good?
He was good when they won the Super
He's
Bowl.
gonna be a Hall of Fame quarterback, and it's just so despicable. I'll play up RBSDM. That's it. Don't you make me bring up the CBOE plus EPA page.
Okay, so what's actually at stake for the Seahawks this weekend? Number one is we've talked about is draft position, and
Isn't it
with a
basically? Okay, tell me about draft position.
win, they would be guaranteed the number 18 pick is the best non-playoff team. With a loss, they could pick as high as number 15, or could still pick 18th, depending on coin flips.
We're
And
like,
tiebreakers, I don't know. I don't know how those work exactly. I mean, basically, they're going to be the exact same range as they were the last 2 years when they took Byron Murphy the second, 16th, and JSN 20th.
I mean, honestly, like you can end up with a very good player at that pick. It's a fine pick to have.
I mean, if we draft another JSN, I'm going to be pretty thrilled.
I mean, there's another JSN out there, and he's from Seattle, Washington. So,
I don't know if they'll go receiver again, but that would be an interesting note. But the real thing that's at stake this weekend is
all right, let's
Geno
hear it.
Smith's roster bonus escalators, each of which would add $2 million to the roster bonus he's due on the fifth day of the league year
He's from Tacoma.
for, yeah, the Seattle, the Puget Sound. The 10th win would get him $2 million. 185 passing yards, which surpasses 2022 total, and get him $2 million. And then his completion percentage is currently 70.2%. He has to keep it above 69.755%, which will be interesting to see if Geno Smith eats some sacks in this one. Like, he's got a lot of incentive to do so.
Is there a chance that they bench him for this game because it doesn't matter? Or do you think he'll ask because the bonuses are at stake? He'll be like, I'm playing. Because it's basically if they bench him and he's losing money because of it, that's grounds for him to be disgruntled the entire offseason.
I think it's grounds for him to potentially hold out. Yeah.
So.
Going into the last year of his contract. I mean, look, there's a lot of people that think that, the Seahawks should cut Geno Smith. There is no world in which the Seahawks should cut Geno Smith.
RBSDM, CPOE plus EPA. You are looking at, this is your Hall of Famer, Matthew Stafford, the 18th best quarterback in the NFL. We're like, what are the Seahawks going to do with Geno? They have such a quarterback problem, right? 15th, way better. Is he younger too? He must be younger, right? Than Stafford? He's 34. Matt Stafford is what his name is. I hate this dude. I've hated him forever. 36, 2 years older. Geno's not even that old.
It's more
Sign
in the
Gino
context
for
of
I'm like now for some reason because I hate Matt Stafford. I'm in on Gino.
I'm not in on Gino. In some ways, these roster bonuses could end up just like determining what his extension looks like. And so I think that maybe if you consider it, the Seahawks go to his agent and are like, look, we're going to play him in this game, but let's consider that when we start talking about an extension, assuming
Okay.
they plan to do that.
He's been quarterback efficiency 2018 to 2024, all the years, right? I think the minimum plays is 272. So I'll give you a spoiler here. The GOAT, Jake Browning, is included.
Hell yeah.
But where do
Did
you
nothing
think
wrong.
Matthew Stafford ranks? Matt Stafford ranks in this time period. What number?
12th. Well, okay, I guess you're including a lot of
Sweet
quarterbacks.
spring child. You know nothing of the winter. 12th.
25th?
12th is Tua Tagovailoa. Your Fitzmagic Tua range. 12th. 25th.
Wait,
Oh.
Fitzmagic is that high?
Dude, Fitzmagic was awesome. 25th? 25th, you'd be in future Super Bowl MVP Jared Goff territory right there. One ahead of Geno Smith. Not 25th.
30th?
30th. Exactly 30th. Behind Nick Mullins, Derek Carr, Teddy Bridgewater, Ryan Tannehill, Kirk Cousins, the much maligned, Jimmy Garoppolo, who get him a starting job. Of course, Jake Browning, who, I mean, they actually should find a starting job for. Like, This is Phil Rivers, man. Also, I looked at one Colts season. And I was like, wow, that Colts team was really good record wise. Who was their quarterback? And I was
it was Phil Rivers, of course.
Phil Rivers, baby. In fact, Matthew Stafford is he's the bizarro Phil Rivers. Phil Rivers was always good and never got credit for it. Matt Stafford has never been good and always gets credit for it. He is bad, bad at football.
So you've discovered a reason to care about this week's game if Matthew Stafford plays.
I've always hated him. He sucks. He sucks as a person too. Sorry. God, put fucking Carson Wentz in the Hall of Fame. Anyway.
Percentage chance is victory.
How is Baker still not higher? I'm kind of shocked by that, considering how good Baker is this year.
I think there were some pretty bad years.
Where's
Andy Dalton on that? Andy Dalton. Where's Sam Darnold on that list?
Truly don't even care.
Is Andy Dalton ahead?
Sam Darnold is 49th.
So what about Andy Dalton?
Andy Dalton is 50th. I mean, this time period doesn't really capture the good Andy Dalton seasons. Right. Like
the Red Rocket years.
And Darnold has basically only been good for this year. So you do have to be good for multiple years, like Jake Browning, of course. Or like Fitzmagic has less plays than some of these other quarterbacks, but not by that much.
All right. Well, I'm going to say also 50. I'm going to say 60% on this one.
Oh, I think they're going to win the game. I think they're going to win the game. And the other thing is, winning 10 games and missing the playoffs is kind of a hard thing to do now. Let's just call it what it is. This is an impressive
I don't know if it's a harder thing to do, because before there were 16 games, so it's easier to win 10 games now. But harder
it's only happened
with the
once.
Extra spot to miss the playoffs.
It's only happened once that a team has won 10 games and missed the playoffs in the 7 playoff team era. I was just delivered some Reese's peanut butter trees, so.
Winning holidays.
Oh.
All right. We will be back early in the new year with the 2024 year in review and 2025 bold predictions.
Early in the new year?
I'm planning to drop it on
New Year's Day.
New Year's Day, but is the idea to give this one a little bit of time to breathe. So I hope everyone enjoys the Sun Bowl. I hope everyone enjoys a happy and safe New Year's, and we will see you in 2025.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
I really was like, I'm going to knock it out of the park on the bold predictions. I spent time with it. Seattle Sports Figure of the Year. I literally have thought about it so much. I'm not even joking. I've thought about it so much. Yeah.
I didn't think about it that much.
I'm so fascinated what you're going to say.
I thought it was kind of obvious. But okay.
You thought it was kind of obvious?
Yeah.
Then I must be forgetting somebody.
I don't think you're forgetting somebody. I think we're just disagreeing about it.
I just don't care about this person. You're like, it's obviously Dave Vilwalk. You're like, the only place I could go is hydroplane racing.
What an amazing year for J. Michael Kelly.
Honestly, like, he might be up there as far as the people. I'm like, every single one that I'm thinking of, I'm like, maybe, kind of, not really. I literally can't even figure out who your person is going to be.
That's good. That's the way I like it. It's like, not going to be a group of people. I hate to disappoint. I love that.
Mine's going to be a concept.
Is it?
It's the only thing that it can be this year. Nobody did anything good. I know this is the Festivus episode. It's been a week, but I've got a lot of problems with you people.
I mean, it was a year in Seattle sports that was mostly notable for the fact that everybody got fired.
All... Anyway.